From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Brazil has touted its success at slowing deforestation of the Amazon rainforest. But NPR correspondent Lourdes Garcia Navarro has seen something more alarming on the ground. She's trekked through burning forests and illegal logging camps. She's talked with complicit government officials and to scientists who are truly afraid for the Amazon's future, for Brazil and for the world. This hour on Point, NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro on the ongoing destruction of the Amazon rainforest. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you been listening over the past week to these riveting reports? What do you hear? Have you seen the destruction firsthand? Lourdes Garcia Navarro's reports come from right on the front line. She was in Rondônia, way out in western Brazil, where rainforest should be. She found a landscape full of fire.
We stop at a small farm, which has just been set alight.
I'm actually walking on the remains of the forest right now. What was once verdant green is now reduced to this white, powdery ash. There are tree trunks smoldering in front of me. Some are actually still shooting up flames.
That you cannot call a rainforest. She found rubber tappers, traveled with them for a while. They talked about how they tried to protect the land themselves, fighting against illegal logging. Here's Giselda Pilker.
Luta tanto para defender, briga tanto, morre.
We struggle so much to defend the land. We fight so hard, she tells me. We die. So many have died to defend what you see here. To cut down a tree is like cutting out a piece of us. No one does anything to save us, she says. We people of the forest are peaceful. We don't want this war.
From Lourdes Garcia Navarro's reporting, and one more, 54-year-old Dona Maria Matara in Brazil explaining why she burns the forest around her house. The stakes are as basic and high as they could be.
That is what subsistence farming is. You know, we eat what we grow.
They grow a little bit of everything, manioc, bananas, corn. She then explains this simple fact of life in the Amazon.
You either burn or you starve. Those are the two choices that we have.
And the forest is burning. With us now from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, Lourdes Garcia Navarro, NPR South America correspondent. Morning Edition today aired the last of her five-part series on the destruction of the Amazon rainforest. She's received many awards, including a Peabody Award for her reporting on the Arab Spring for NPR, reported from all over the world for NPR, the BBC, Voice of America, Associated Press. Lourdes Garcia Navarro, it's so good to have you back. Welcome to On Point, and congratulations on an incredible piece of reporting you've been doing.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's nice to be here.
Help us just right off the bat put these two things together. I'm looking at a headline from, less than one month ago in the Christian Science Monitor, and the headline is How Brazil Curbed Amazon Deforestation by 90% in 10 Years. That would suggest everything's going great.
Well, I think that was one of the things that was really interesting to me. You know, I wanted to look at the process of deforestation in more, shall I say this, in a holistic way. So a lot of the coverage lately has been about climate change, and that's right. But Brazil is home to 65% of the Amazon, and there's a massive drought along the coast here, hitting cities like Sao Paulo, the economic hub of the country. And some scientists have been linking cutting down the trees and that drought. And so what interested me about this is I really didn't quite get the connection. So that was really the driver of why I went there. I wanted to understand how deforestation happens and what we're seeing in the Amazon. And I really wasn't prepared for what I found. I had read the headlines, too. I had talked to people who, and the head of environmental NGOs, it said that Brazil was really doing an amazing job in curbing deforestation. And yet when I got there, what people were telling me on the ground was something very, very different. If you think about it, the two ideas aren't mutually exclusive. Yes, in the last 10 years, Brazil has curbed deforestation by some 85%, and that's a wonderful thing to have done. But that does not mean that deforestation has stopped. If you think of the forest like a pie, right now, 20% of the forest is already gone in Brazil, completely gone. They say about another 20% is degraded in some sense. So you've got 40% of the forest in some way compromised, damaged, or completely gone. And So they're saying, okay, look, we've reduced deforestation by this amazing number, but yet the forest is still being destroyed. It's just being destroyed more slowly. And they're delivering it like good news, when in fact, it's not good news.
2,000 square miles a year still going down. That's down from something like 10,000 plus a year. Does this reach a point at which, scientifically, the degradation of the Amazon rainforest becomes a problem for Brazil, for South America, for the hemisphere of the planet?
Yes, I think there's no question about that. The science is clear that the Amazon fulfills a very important function. First of all, as you called it, the lungs of the world, basically this huge mass, biomass, breathes oxygen, basically expels oxygen into the air, which is the very air we breathe. We also, know now, we believe, that deforestation means something for climate change. I focus on recent science that shows that the trees of the Amazon may affect the climate for the entire continent of South America. The trees basically lower the pressure above the Amazon. They pull in moisture from the ocean, so the theory goes, and that allows it to regulate what areas get water and what areas don't. So if the forest has lost its capacity to do that, then we're in for a very, very rough ride. And some people link that already, what the deforestation that's already happened, to the drought in Sao Paulo.
We'll talk more about that. Lourdes, when you gear up to do a big series of stories, you really get going. I mean, this was a very high-impact report. Tell us about where you set out to do it. You're way out in Rondônia, which is all the way up against the border of Bolivia, way out in west central Brazil, I guess.
That's right. I was looking. When you start to do a report of this nature, first of all, it takes a lot of people to pull this together. We went out with a producer. We had the head of our visuals team, Kainaz Amaria, coming to take the beautiful photos that you'll see online. We're having a huge online package going out later this week. There was just a lot of people supporting us, doing data, looking at the data, talking to scientists and all sorts of people to pull this together. So we could get a good picture of where it was that we wanted to go. But I chose Rondônia, first of all, because it's a small state, so it makes it manageable. If you think that the Amazon is, almost half of Brazil, it's a huge, huge area. Mm-hmm. So we really wanted to focus on a small area. And also Rondônia has a very interesting history. It's a state that only became a state in the 1980s. And when it did become a state, it basically opened itself up to settlers. And so it invited all these people, the poor and the dispossessed from different parts of Brazil, to come and to colonize it. And they basically, there's amazing footage of this, they basically got off buses and they walked into the forest to claim their land, sort of like the Oklahoma land rush. And so at a certain point in time, the Brazilian government was encouraging deforestation because they saw it as a way to get the economy of the country moving and to help the poorest of the poor basically take part in the Brazilian dream.
So at this point, is the deforestation mainly from stories like you shared there with Dona Maria Matara, who said burn or starve, because I guess burning makes the ground more fertile, makes farming possible? Or is it a story of big landowners and rich landowners, I guess, taking the forest down?
It's a story of two things, actually. So historically, what has been the big driver of deforestation, and the majority of deforestation is actually the result of cattle farming. So that is really what has really pushed deforestation. Also, soy farming. These require huge tracts of land, and Brazil happens to do these things very inefficiently. So they've taken over big, big areas of land. But what we're seeing now, actually, in the most recent studies, and that's what I found really interesting, is that half of all deforestation in Brazil, half, is now taking place on small plots of land like Doña Matara's. And so that's what I was interested. What has changed? Why is it changing? And who is now doing the deforesting? And this kind of deforestation is extremely difficult to combat. It's very, very difficult also to sort of see from the satellites. Brazil has a very, very comprehensive monitoring system from two different satellite systems, and so they have a very good idea of how to look at deforestation from the sky, but this kind of deforestation is very, very hard to track, and so we're seeing more and more of it.
What about stopping it? Is it possible? I mean, the expectations of Brazil are very high here. And as you and many others describe it, the environmental, the ecological implications are enormous. But when you've got poverty and you've got half of the deforestation done by individual tiny, small farmers, is that stoppable?
Well, I mean, that is definitely a good question. Many of the people that I spoke to on the ground who are actually tasked by Brazil's government to combat deforestation say that the way things are now, they feel completely disempowered to be able to combat deforestation. In Rondônia, for example, you have various different agencies trying to combat deforestation. You have the environmental police. They only have 100-plus police officers for the entire state. They should have over 500. They've sort of been defunded. You have IBAMA, which is the federal agency that is tasked with combating deforestation. They only have 1,000 agents for the entire country. And in Rondônia, they just had their helicopter taken away in budget cuts. Helicopters are actually important in a place like the Amazon because you can swoop in and you have the element of surprise. When I was on a raid with a group of agents and police, basically we sort of rumbled through. It took hours to get where we were going. You know, we saw people zipping past us on motorbikes, and by the time we got to where we were going, there was nobody there, even though we could see the signs that there'd been loggers acting in a protected reserve. And many of the agents that I spoke to said this is part of the problem. We simply don't have the manpower. We should be in these protected reserves full time. Instead, what's happening is we're having to go in, do these raids, and then leave again to another place, and then the loggers just come right back in.
Illegal logging in that case, in many other cases, it's ranchers or small farmers taking down rainforests. The report that Lourdes Garcia Navarro has been sharing over the last several days, really arresting to the ear and to the mind to think of the Amazon rainforest still coming down at the rate of 2,000 square miles a year. We're talking this hour about the fate of the Amazon rainforest with NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro. She's been delivering an incredible series of stories, reports from the front lines of the fight to save or lose the forest, the so-called lungs of the world. You may have been hearing it on Morning Edition. Sometimes, as Lourdes was just saying, she was out with state officials, with officers, police, in effect, paid to guard the forests. They're up against it. It's tough. Here's a little bit of that.
One of the officers, Mark James, walked over and pointed at the blaze. I'm interpreting what he tells me in Portuguese.
Você olha daqui, você vê castanheiras.
Look at those trees there. Some of those are Brazil nut trees. They're valuable. And they just cut them down and burn them as if they were nothing.
Trees just coming down. Sometimes it's police or officials trying to guard them or making some sort of gesture in that direction. Sometimes Lourdes was out with rubber tappers, self-appointed guardians of the forest, deep in the Amazon here in the Brazilian state of Rondônia, hoping to stop illegal loggers. It's dangerous.
The tappers, and there are seven of them in all, signal to one another when it's okay to proceed. We're having to stop and start all the time to make sure that we won't come into sudden contact with illegal logging groups.
You do not want to do that. It can be very dangerous. Here she is talking with Elezuru Bersacola, leader of the group of rubber tappers in Rondônia there, telling her about the dangers of trying to stop the illegal loggers.
We rubber tappers, he says, are being hunted because we're trying to protect what you see around you. He tells me 16 rubber tappers in the area, called Machadinho do Oeste, in the Brazilian state of Rondônia, have been murdered in the past decade. Zeo's wearing a battered backpack that has 3 bullet holes in it. It's from a recent attempt, he says, on his life.
It's dangerous business trying to stop the deforestation of the Amazon. Lourdes, we want to go upriver with you. We've got a lot of callers for you as well. Many people have been listening to your reports from Dayton, Ohio. Stuart is calling. Stuart, you're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
All right. What do you know, Stuart?
Well, I was born in the Amazon jungle, for starters. My father was a missionary back from the 70s all the way to 1988.
Okay.
And they went through, they were working through Bob Jones and Gospel Federation Association, through Puta Caquara.
Yep.
And Brazil. Well, throughout the in, years, they were getting to, know the locals and the Indians down there for the salvation, but after time.
Stuart, are you there, my friend?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So what did you see and, of deforestation?
After the jungle was opened up, a lot of the locals was able to get into the Amazon due to the gold, the petroleum. It wasn't just about the trees. Until this day, it's gotten worse.
Are you hopeful, Stuart? You were born there. Do you think it's going to survive to do what it needs to do for Brazil, for the world?
Well, yeah, they're expanding the jungle, but the locals are basically feeling hurt from the jungle being torn apart for gold, diamonds, and petroleum. But the country needs the land for expansion, for ethanol, petroleum, and over the years, this was basically what's going on. It's not just about the logs.
Not just about the... Stuart, we've got it. Lourdes, what about it? Did you see evidence of all that going on in Rondônia where you were, or is it primarily forest products driven there?
It's a lot of different things. Actually, Rondônia has this huge, as our caller mentioned, diamond mine that is on indigenous land and has been the subject of a great deal of controversy. Excuse me, a great deal of controversy and problems. Equally so, yes, there is mining. There's a lot of different things going on. But the primary drivers of deforestation, the cutting down of trees, is actually either, as I mentioned, meat, soy, and logging. And that's basically why we're seeing cutting down the trees. But there's a lot of different reasons why people come to the Amazon area. It's got a lot of things there. That's why it's such an important resource.
Tell us about the rubber tappers you were out with. These are not official protectors of the forest, and yet they've sort of taken upon themselves. Is that because their rubber trees are endangered, or they just feel that connection to the forest? What?
I think it's a bunch of different things. I mean, we're seeing this sort of vigilantism in the Amazon popping up in different places. You may have seen reports about indigenous groups also protecting themselves with arms in a different part of the Amazon. These rubber tappers generally feel that, as you've heard, that they're hunted. They also are allowed to live in these protected reserves. And so this is where their livelihood comes from. And so when people come in and invade the forest and degrade it and take it over, it's really a battle over resources. They're allowed to be there. They say that what they do is sustainable, which it is. Rubber tapping is sustainable. They don't kill the trees. And so they really want to see these loggers seen off, but they just say there's no one there to do it. When there's an operation in their areas, immediately what ends up happening is the loggers just come right back. So they feel like they have to really take it upon themselves to do what they can to make sure that their trees are safe.
I mean, you were out there as they were setting fire to illegal logging camps, hoping that they wouldn't be used again. Things get pretty rough here. Here's a bit from that moment.
Eliseo and his crew set fire to the camps to make sure they can't be used again. Smoke billows into the air. Suddenly, we're not alone.
Yeah, he shot us.
Griselda spots a motorbike coming towards us. We've been warned that the illegal loggers have scouts watching their camps. We try and hide, but the rubber tappers, headed by Eliseo, charge after the biker, firing their weapons.
Lourdes, that's the people you were with firing there, right? To sort of scare off the illegal loggers, or were they actually trying to, you know, shoot to hurt?
Very difficult to know. I was terrified, and I basically scrambled into the trees. And it's you know, I've covered a lot of conflicts, and so I thought I'd be prepared for a moment like this, but it's very different being in the middle of the jungle, not knowing what's really happening, not knowing what might be around the corner, and really nowhere to go. We basically hid in the bushes and the undergrowth until we sort of realized that the conflict had moved away, and then we basically pulled out. But what I ended up finding out was that basically, no, it was just the one guy who had come on a motorcycle. You know, we talked to the police afterwards. He was apparently the guy was in some way in that part of the forest, because it's basically you either are a rubber tapper there, it's a protected area, or it was right out near an illegal logging road. There's no reason to sort of be on a motorcycle in this area. And so the police then told us afterwards that they believed he was someone who was indeed working for the illegal logging gangs. There's no way to really know. But yeah, these guys basically took it upon themselves to fire and scare them off. He said, but he wasn't injured. You know, we checked afterwards that was the case.
Gunfire deep in the Amazon rainforest, and Lourdes Garcia Navarro right there reporting on the front lines of deforestation. Sebastian's calling from Columbia, Missouri. Sebastian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had a question for Lourdes about the disconnect, I guess, between the federal government and state governments in Brazil. I'd looked into the question of conflicts between settlers and indigenous groups, and I was wondering, obviously, the federal government has a large interest in agricultural development. I was wondering if you felt like there'd been any, you know, intentional undercutting of agencies that are supposed to try to prevent deforestation.
That's a great question, and the answer is yes, I think. Or at least that's what I was told on the ground by the people who should know. We went around to all the different groups, whether they work for the Ministry of Defense, a group called CIPAM, or whether it was IBAMA, the federal organization, or whether it was the environmental police, and they had a very similar story to tell. And we even went to the state government, where the state senators are, and it was pretty clear to me, talking to all these different groups, that there is a big disconnect between what the local government is doing in Rondônia and what the federal government is doing. And we were told that over and over again, state politicians and agencies were really trying to undercut some of the legislation that the federal government was imposing. They gave me one example. Right now, the legislature in Rondônia is trying to pass a law that would allow environmental impact studies for dams to sort of be easier to do, undercutting a federal law. So we are seeing that sort of tension between what state governments do and what the government of, you know, Dilma Rousseff is doing. But it also has to be said that when you talk to environmentalists in Brazil, Dilma Rousseff gets very, very low marks for environmental protection. They feel that she really has not done as much as her predecessor, Ignacio Lula da Silva, did to really help deforestation, to preserve the environment. They feel, in fact, quite the opposite, that her government has simply not taken on the responsibility to protect the rainforest in the way that it should.
I want to ask you about why that might be, but let's listen for just a moment here. This was Brazil's current president, Dilma Rousseff, in August, talking with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, saying Brazil has made progress in protecting the Amazon.
We have made a huge effort, and we have reduced by 83% illegal deforestation in the Amazon.
That's the claim that Brazil makes to the world, and it has come down, and yet it goes on. Here's Herminio Coelho, an opposition politician in the state legislature in Rondônia, where Lourdes was, saying most politicians there do not care about preservation of the Amazon.
Our assembly is a criminal enterprise. No one is interested in helping the environment. And if it was up to the state assembly, there wouldn't be a single tree left in Rondônia.
Rhonda is calling from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Rhonda, you're on.
Hi. Thanks, Tom, for this conversation. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, I just watched a documentary last week called Cowspiracy in Brazil.
Cowspiracy, like cattle, cow, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, like cattle, cow. And it's about all the environmental organizations who kind of ignore the elephant or the cow in the room, which is that this land is being cleared either directly or indirectly for the cattle industry. The small farmers who grow soy, the soy is fed to cattle. There have been hundreds of people that have been murdered in Brazil over the last several decades, and much of that has been related to the cattle industry. Most notably was a nun a few years ago who was murdered, who had written a book and had spent her life in the Amazon trying to expose the cattle industry. Mm-hmm. And Lourdes might know what I'm talking about here, but my sense is until the world and certainly the Western population can curb our meat consumption, we're going to continue to lose rainforest.
So bringing it right back home, Rhonda, I appreciate your call. We're talking with Lourdes Garcia Navarro about her reporting on continuing deforestation in the Amazon rainforest. Lourdes, you mentioned soy. You mentioned cattle ranching. What about the confluence of those big business interests with what's happening in the forest? I mean, we're not strangers to this in the United States. We all know that big economic powers can have big economic impacts. But we're talking a really crucial natural expanse here. Is the state government, is the federal government in the pocket or under the sway of those economic interests?
Well, my story today actually was about a senator from the state of Rondônia who is now was a two-time governor and is now sitting in the federal government. And I try and talk about his history in the state and how he made his money through cattle ranching and through building dams and through all these other things.
This is Ivo Casal.
Ivo Casal. And then now he sits on the Environmental Committee, and he's part of a very strong rural caucus in Brazil's Congress. And they have a lot of influence and they wield a lot of power. And so one of the things that they have managed to push through recently, among many other things, is a change into the forest code in Brazil. Now, the forest code in Brazil is pretty interesting. Brazil had some of the best laws on forest protection on the books from the 1960s. And then in 2012, the law was effectively weakened. And that's according to environmentalists I spoke to. What the code did is essentially forgive any deforestation that took place before 2008. So there was a lot of other things that the forest code did. But really, among environmentalists, this new 2012 legislation is seen as the result of the rural caucus. And so it has a great deal of influence. And when you look at this stuff, you really see that there is a lot of pressure, like in the United States, by the way. There are lobbyists everywhere. There are people who are interested everywhere. But that is this, you know, you see the same thing here in Brazil. The problem right now is that Brazil is going through a massive economic crisis. There is a massive political crisis. Dilma Rousseff is in an extremely weak position. They're calling for her impeachment. And so all these competing interests and a very weak central government means that for the environment, you really don't have anyone to negotiate with on the federal level. It's very, very difficult, even if they wanted to, for the federal government to push things through.
Brazil's economic crisis related in no small part to the slowdown in China, to falling prices for natural resources. But do not Brazilians look at this forest and think if we take this too far, the environmental impact of this forest destruction could become its own economic downward spiral? I mean, after all, you and others are making the connection between drought in Sao Paulo and elsewhere in Brazil and the degradation of the rainforest. Could this deforestation itself put Brazil on a down escalator?
I mean, a lot of people have made those connections. They talk about the green economy. They say reforestation and could add a great deal to Brazil's economy. Also, if there were more efficient methods of cattle farming or soy farming, that would mean that they'd have greater productivity. And when you talk to farmers, and I've done this, not just here in the, not just there in the Brazilian Amazon, but also here on the coast where we're feeling the drought, you know, they say, hey, we're feeling it. We are people who live off the land. We know now that when the rains don't come, we can feel the heat. We can see how it affects the crops. And so there is a real sense that what is happening is very, very serious and extremely alarming. Brazilians, by and large, you know, support stopping deforestation. Brazil has indeed pledged to stop deforestation by 2030. But some of the people I spoke to say, hey, that's too late. 2030 is 15 years from now. And you'll lose a lot of trees by then. There's going to be a lot more problems. And we need solutions right now.
Are people saying this is self-destruction for Brazil?
Yeah, I think this is the thing that's so interesting. There wasn't a person that I spoke to, and that goes back to Doña Matara on her farm, who's been fined for cutting down trees, who didn't say, yes, I know cutting down the trees is wrong. But as she said, you either burn or you starve. And when you are faced with those stark choices, you always opt for survival.
It's incredible reporting that Lourdes Garcia Navarro has been doing for NPR out of the Amazon rainforest on the destruction of that forest. Lourdes, please stand by there in Rio de Janeiro. Listeners, you can join us this hour. What strikes you most in this story? The lawlessness, the political complicity, the poor with few options, the environmental danger, super danger? And what happens if this goes on? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fate of the Amazon rainforest with NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro. She was way out in the west of Brazil, right up against the Brazilian borders in the state of Rondônia. It's got the Madeira River, which feeds into the Amazon, part of that great basin. Deforestation going on at a kind of fearsome clip she saw there. And even those responsible for protecting the forest She was out there with them, and you'll hear them wondering if it's an impossible mission.
We pulled into the police base camp in the forest. They didn't catch anyone, even though we could see all the evidence that people had been illegally cutting down trees. The police said the timber gangs had probably been tipped off. We talked to federal agent João Alberto.
No momento, se continuar como está, eu acho que sim.
I asked him if saving the forest was a lost cause, and he says if things continue the way they are, yes, it is a lost cause.
And the consequences of all this for the environment? Lourdes sat down with Antonio Nobre, leading climate scientist in Brazil. He talked about how the rainforest should pump a huge flow of water up into the air. Rivers of rainfall, you'll hear him describing. Of course, that could also go away.
This huge flow of vapor to the atmosphere is like an irrigation, upside down. It's the reverse of rainfall.
What it creates, Nobre says, are these massive, invisible, flying rivers.
We did a calculation for the entire Amazon. We came with a number that is 20 billion tons of water evaporated per day in the Amazon basin.
And if that breaks down, it's like, he tells her, organ failure.
Even in a year that was very wet, still she saw incredible number of fires breaking into the rainforest. This is a very, very alarming sign that the system is failing. It means multiple organ failure, like in an intensive care unit.
Lourdes Garcia Navarro joins us from Rio de Janeiro. Laura is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Laura, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Good day. How are you doing today?
All right.
Well, my question was, I know in the United States we do a lot of our own deforestation. I was wondering if the impact in Brazil is it from the United States, or is it a lot of stuff from South America?
The impact in terms of what people are buying and the demand for product?
The deforestation that's going on in Brazil, is that from, is it coming to America, or is it staying in the United States, more or less?
Lourdes, let's look at that a couple of ways. Laura, I appreciate your call. First of all, economic impact from American markets, I guess. And secondly, what about the environmental impact and how that flows? Does it flow all the way north?
So, first of all, I mean, one of the things that's so interesting about this is that the United States is the biggest consumer of Brazil's Amazonian wood. It gets more Brazilian timber products than any other country in the world. And what we know from various studies is that a lot of the timber that comes out of the Brazilian Amazon is actually laundered. And there have been various studies that have looked at this, and so have a number of NGOs. So what you can see, first of all, is that, yes, the United States and we in developed countries are implicated in this because we consume and have an appetite for these Amazonian products. Ipe wood, for example, is very desired in the United States, especially in, expensive homes, because it's very resistant to, it's just a very resistant type of wood. And so, yes, we definitely are implicated. I mean, also, of course, if the rainforest goes away, we will feel the effects of that. There's no question.
I mean, I'm reading here reports, and you go to this as well in your reporting, that if this Amazon sort of water pump, moisture pump breaks down, the consequences can be very widespread all over South America, and for that matter, perhaps into Texas and the South and Southwest United States. I mean, it's a very wide-reaching potential impact.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about science. They do all these models, and there was even a model that looked at if the Amazon all of a sudden disappeared, if you just took it out of the modeling system, what would happen? What it showed was that indeed the consequences could be very drastic and could have an enormous impact. And so when we start fiddling with things like, this mass amount of trees that we're only still discovering what effect it might have on climate, what effect it might have on what places can grow food and what places can't, then, you are into a very, very scary place. And that was just the message that I heard over and over again from scientists, from people on the ground, that we really need to protect this area as much as we can. And we need to find ways to make it palatable for the people that are actually doing the deforesting to stop. And so when you look at someone like Doña Matara again, what she was saying is, hey, we don't need to be punished. I don't need to be fined. I've been fined a lot. I can't afford to pay the fines, so it doesn't matter to me if they make it $1 or $10,000 or $30,000. That's not going to provide an incentive for me to stop deforesting. What we need is actually something else. We need to have incentives in place, financial or otherwise, that will allow us to actually preserve the land. We can be good stewards of the forest if we are part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Judy in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Judy, you're on the air with Lourdes in Rio.
Yes, hi, Tom. I wanted to ask Lourdes if there's any concerted effort on the part of other nations to help Brazil in dealing with this crisis, because indeed it is a worldwide crisis.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. Brazil, when you asked, Tom, you said, should the world be paying Brazil to help the rainforest? The world already has. Norway gave Brazil $1 billion to help in protecting the Amazon rainforest. And there are other financial mechanisms that have helped Brazil do this, which is why you have seen, in part, illegal deforestation go down so dramatically. You know, it's interesting about the Amazon, and it's a real conundrum for Brazil. On the one hand, Brazil's Amazon is sovereign territory. It is part of, the country. And on the other hand, there is so much interest around the world. The entire world sees it as a vital resource that needs to be protected. And so the government is somehow caught in the middle. You know, on the one hand, it really needs to help its people progress. But on the other hand, it also needs to be a good steward of the environment. And that's where the tension comes from.
Let's go to Janet calling in Montreal, Wisconsin. Janet, you're on the air.
Yes, my question is, do you really believe that if we as a nation donate money to save this rainforest, that if you give it to the government, that they're really going to take the money and use it to actually, implement and save it and help the people that, that are destitute, that are using this product, to better themselves, because there's actually nothing else?
Lourdes, what about it? Norway's put $1 billion in, and still the deforestation goes on. Now it's down, but it still goes on. You hear Janet's question. If the world steps up in a big way, what's the guarantee that Brazil would use this to stop the deforestation?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer to that. I don't know that anyone that I spoke to had the answer to that question. I think definitely doing nothing isn't exactly an option either. So it's a question of what do you do? What mechanisms can you put in place? And there are a lot of people thinking about this. I mean, one of the other things that I found so surprising about going to Rondônia is all the environmental NGOs that work there, all the different governments that have interests there that have tried to help in different ways. And there are a lot of good ideas out there. The question is making them wide scale. The question is implementation. You know, when I was out there, I went to visit a tribe that's one of the first tribes, indigenous tribes, doing carbon credits. And so they are sort of pioneers in the idea that if they plant trees and are good stewards of their land, then a company... The company that they dealt with was in Brazil, but they had, people and companies all over the world trying to buy into this. We'll give them money to do that, so that will offset their pollution or their carbon credit somewhere else. And so people are looking at this as a way to help the situation. Other people fund NGOs that look at how to reforest in a way that's sustainable. So, there's a lot of people working on this and that are doing really good work and work that needs to be done. The question is how much impact it will have overall. And ultimately, you can have 1 million NGOs working there. You can have 1 million foreign governments looking at this. But really, the only people that can do anything about what's happening in the Amazon is the Brazilian government, both local and national, because it's their country. And so the Brazilians themselves and the country of Brazil itself really are the ones that have to do this and look at this and try and combat this every day. And they do, and they do. But there's still, according to many people, is a long way to go.
And yet, there was a suggestion in your reporting just today of a kind of a deal on offer. And I don't know if this was serious or not, but your Ivo Cassol, the sort of big political wheeler-dealer from Rondônia province, in federal politics now, was talking to you about the upcoming climate talks in Paris and if what kind of deal Brazil might make to stop this deforestation. It's important to carbon, CO2 sequestration, and a lot more. You've got some tape here where he talks about other countries who have deforested over a long time, about how the United States once did. And there's almost a kind of extortion perhaps suggested here. You know, you want the lungs of the world, you want them alive and functioning, give us money. Here's the evil Casal.
Is it fair to ask Brazil to do all the conservation when the United States made the mess to begin with? That's very hypocritical of the Americans. The same rules have to apply for everyone or for no one. Are we to be the slave of other countries, the lungs of the United States, the lungs of other countries, even though they send us only a pittance to pay for conservation? I won't accept it. No.
And of course, Lourdes says, I won't accept that. No. So if you want your lungs, send money. On the other hand, you know, he's looking at the industrialization that went on much earlier in the United States. It said the world paid a price for your industrialization. Is that extortion or what's going on there? Is there a price that if it were met, things would change?
Don't even look at this in terms of Brazil. Right now, one of the main sticking points in these talks in Paris is exactly this issue. Poorer countries, developing nations, say, why should we bear the burden of protecting what's left when Europe, when the United States, basically deforested all their land, they polluted all they wanted, and now they are extremely prosperous. And there is a link between those two things. There is a link between people using their resources and prosperity. And so the basic tenet right now in those Paris talks, you know, Ivo Cassol, agree with him or disagree with him, is really just articulating what a lot of countries all around the world are saying. And that is really what is being negotiated in Paris right now. I think there's an understanding everywhere that something needs to be done. No one's saying, hey, let's just continue the way we're going because it's all going fine. No, I think people are really feeling the effects of climate change everywhere. But the question is, how are we going to pay for what needs to be done? Who should pay for what needs to be done? And that's what Ivo Cassol is articulating.
I mean, the difference this time, Lord, is unlike, let's say, the 19th century, is that sometimes the planet can really seem on the brink. And you and others are describing some major environmental meltdowns if the rainforest gets too small. I mean, yes, it was environmentally very costly what the United States and other industrialized nations did, but this time it's almost like a game of chicken. And if Brazil goes forward with the deforestation, it will pay a terrible price. So will the rest of the world. It's almost like, well, who's going to step up and stop this?
And I think that's the question. But, you know, you have people like Ivo Cassol, and he's not alone. There are many of them who articulate this and say, this is about money, this is about resources, and if you want us to bear the burden to do this, you're going to have to pay for it. And you can look at it as extortion, or you can simply look at it as someone wanting to get the best deal for their country. That's his position, and many other people around the world feel the same way.
Let's go to Fabio, calling from Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Fabio, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Tom, for letting me in. I'd just like to add a few lines regarding the thoughts as far as Brazil going. From Norway, it's a big help. And in truth, this should help a lot to solve the problem down there. But in reality, nobody knows exactly where the money comes from because state forest people, they have to work in canoes, very bad boats. They have to travel a lot on the water. They put their lives on the line and in front of a bunch of things. And basically, people really don't pay attention to the north.
Hey, Fabio, are you from Brazil?
Yes, I am, Tom.
What do you think should be done to try and save the rainforest there? What's the best way to go?
Tom, honestly speaking, I was born in Brazil. It's been 20 and plus years that I'm living in the United States right now. I'm gladly happy and being living here. And I'll tell you this. Brazil hasn't changed in the last 10 years. Brazil is a place where it becomes the center of the corruption in my eyes. Brazil is a very bad place. It has beautiful beaches, it has nice colleges, nice universities, nice people, a bunch of good people. But the corruption in Brazil, the bribe business, it came to a point that people struggle. Like the other lady the other day, she was saying that, or we burn, or we're going to die down here.
Fabio, our time is so short. Lourdes, where's the hope in this story?
The hope in this story is, we always have to end it on an up note, I guess. The hope in this story is that people are aware of this, and that there is a meeting in Paris and people are coming together, and it is a subject of discussion. And the more we talk about it, the more pressure that is brought to bear, hopefully things will be done.
Well, you put it front and center in a lot of people's minds. Let us hope that the insights you share have some impact as people absorb them. Love your reporting, and we're very grateful to you for spending the time with us today. Lourdes Garcia Navarro in Rio de Janeiro. Thank you so much, Lourdes.
Thank you.
Listeners, join the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.